Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Please consider supporting Black Women United, YEG, for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. You can learn more about them at bwunited.ca. They are always looking for donations and volunteers. So please, again, support Black Women United, YEG, for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. Again, that website is bwunited.ca.
My name is Frank Silvestri. I'm from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, not a Canadian. And Philly's really close to New Jersey, by the way. And I'm here to talk to you about why I am a Patreon supporter of Vish Khanna's Creative Control podcast, the unique long-form exploration of music, comedy, art, geography, and so much more. Vish is an incredible interviewer who has a charming, disarming, funny, reverently irreverent style, which feels a lot more like a conversation with friends than a podcast interview. These conversations have included talking to people like Jeff Tweedy, Nels Klein, Ira Kaplan, Dan Romano, Carson McCone, the white hot lung Juliana Riolino, and one of my all-time favorites, the Sadies. So if you're like me and you find these kind of conversations vital, essential, and important, I hope you'll join me in supporting Creative Control on Patreon.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Eric Burton and Adrian Quesada are musical collaborators who live in Austin, Texas. A gifted singer and songwriter, Burton originally hails from Los Angeles and moved to Austin, where he encountered Quesada, who himself was raised in Texas, and is a multi-instrumentalist and a producer. They formed Black Pumas in 2017, and their 2019 self-titled debut earned them the first of the 7 Grammy Award nominations they've received to date, including one for their latest album, Chronicles of a Diamond, which was released by ATO Records on October 27th, 2023. Eric and Adrian and I connected recently for a talk about things like the history of Black Pumas, a family connection to the Steve Martin film The Jerk, loving hip-hop for its punk spirit, writing songs about romantic and platonic relationships, and also birds, where their penchant for psychedelic soul music might come from, hitting the road again, other future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you, who follow and subscribe to this donor-driven podcast and spread the word about it, and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, which, as I'm speaking to you, I can reveal is my only real form of income these days. So if you like the show and you like me and you want to see me and the show continue and be able to live, please. Was that too guilt-inducing? I didn't mean to do that. I'm just saying, if you have the means and can support the show on Patreon, that would be great. You have no idea how great that would be as I'm speaking to you. Patreon.com/creative control. Thanks forever and again for your lovely generosity there. With additional support from Blackbird Music, a wonderful record store with bricks and mortar locations in Edmonton and Calgary, Alberta, and friendly staff will help you if you walk into those places. But they also have a great website, blackbird.ca. Say you want a copy of the new Black Pumas record, Chronicles of a Diamond, go to blackbird.ca, see if they don't have it in stock, and if they do, or they can get it for you, they'll ship it right to your house. It's just that simple. Again, learn more about Blackbird Music at blackbird.ca. Plus in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, respectively, in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 836 of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented Eric and Adrian from Black Pumas, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hey, Eric, how's it going?
Hey, what's up, Vish? Thanks for having us.
Oh, it's my pleasure to have you. I know we talked about this just before we started rolling, but I always ask my guests where in the world they are, so I'm sticking to my guns. Where in the world are you, Eric? As if I didn't know.
Yeah, right. This is, I'm in Austin, Texas right now, birthplace of Black Pumas, kind of chilling on South Congress where Black Pumas management lives.
Nice. Now, birthplace of Black Pumas, is that where you're actually from?
No, I was actually born in the Los Angeles region, San Fernando Valley, actually. That's where I was born.
Yeah. California guy. What brought you to Austin?
The music. I was busking on the Santa Monica Pier with a couple of guys, and there was this one guy who just wouldn't stop going on and on about how amazing this place was. We ended up taking a trip that ended up meaning that I would find a new home, and that's... That was October 7th, 2015, which was my birthday. And the gift I gifted myself was, a place to stay, pretty much. So here we are.
Nice. Was it difficult to... I mean, I know a little bit about American geography and climates and whatnot. So you didn't... My sense is you didn't move to a radically different place, environmentally, so to speak. But was it difficult to adjust to life in Austin after living in California?
Honestly, as soon as I got here, man, the adjustment was like night and day. I mean, I feel like the people here are generally really warm and embracing to people who are artists. So yeah. That's what we love about Austin. So I'm glad to be here. It feels and the feelings never changed.
Oh, great. That's awesome to hear. That's great to hear. Also on the line here, Adrian, are you there?
I am. What's up, Vish?
Oh, not too much. Thanks for asking. Where in the world are you?
Austin, Texas as well. I'm in East Austin.
Now, how far away is East Austin from where Eric is?
10, 15 minutes. Everything's pretty close by here.
Oh, nice. Okay, cool. You're chilling. Where are you? Your house?
I'm in my studio.
Nice. Is that where you do most of your Black Puma stuff?
This record, we kind of did it all over the world, but kind of brought it home here to wrap it up. So, but nice. we do a lot of stuff here, yeah.
Yeah, and are you from Austin originally?
No, I'm not. I'm from South Texas. I'm from Laredo, Texas.
Oh, okay.
Very few people in Austin are from Austin. It's kind of one of those cities, yeah.
One of those places. Well, I know Laredo from the song Streets of Laredo. Otherwise, I'm trying to think of what else I know about it. What is notable about Laredo, Texas?
It's kind of like been romanticized in a lot of songs and movies and stuff like that. But it's a border town with Mexico, so That's kind of what it's been known for. And my dad just told me it is now the biggest inland port, I think, in the world. I don't want to say a stupid fact and get that wrong, but it's something like that. You know, that's what my dad said it's now famous for. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, and what brought you to Austin? Sorry, geographically, how far away is Laredo from Austin?
4 hours, 3.5 hours.
It's a 4-hour drive. What brought you to Austin?
Music, really. School, came to college here, and I knew it was a music town, you know. Mm-hmm. Seemed like the closest city to my hometown that I could go to college and do music and be immersed in a new city. You know, I wanted to stay close by. I wanted to stay close to my family, so came up here.
I see. Nice. Do you have any sense recall of when you first encountered Eric?
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure. 2017, I don't remember the date, but yeah, we kind of texted and talked a couple of times before we got together one fateful afternoon at my house where my studio used to be and did some recording.
You texted and talked. How did you even make that connection?
A mutual friend named Brian Ray introduced us, and I emailed Eric. A couple weeks later, we connected over the phone and a little bit of communication. I sent him some demos, and we got together in the studio.
Oh, nice. Eric, does this check out? Is Adrian's memory correct?
Oh, no, he's completely, he's full of it. Yeah, he's lying. All lies. No, yeah, that's kind of how it happened, man. It just kind of happened, you know, it wasn't forced or anything like that. You know, our mutual friend introduced us, and I didn't get back to Adrian and or our friend for a couple of weeks before, like, calling Adrian and singing on the phone pretty much. And I was just so excited about the music. It was, you know, it was just so cool. I loved the visual nature that, you know, the music was kind of like presented to me, of how it was presented, you know, in the way that Adrian put it together. And it was just really inspiring. And that inspiration just, I think, really carried us in the very beginning.
So I understand what it was like when you encountered what Adrian made. Do you have any sense of what your friend, your mutual friend, was trying to get to by connecting you? Like, had you expressed an interest in working with local musicians or anything like that, Eric?
You know, I still have like the same 2, 3, 4 guys that I've been friends with since I moved here, who are also musicians. They work in the industry. They've played in different bands. And I've kept my circle pretty tight to that degree. But there was a time in the very beginning where I just kind of needed help with some of the learning curve behind engineering and mixing my own ideas. That's kind of how my relationship with our mutual friend that introduced us, Brian, kind of came about. He helped me do some recording. You know, he had lunch with Adrian shortly after and, you know, threw my name out there. And that's kind of how we connected.
Okay, cool. So what is your sort of musical background and I don't want to say talent. That came across, that was going to come across wrong, and I said it out loud anyway. I mean, like, what is your primary instrument? And that's, you're a beautiful singer, if I may say, but do you have a primary instrument?
Yeah, man, I think my instrument is just songwriting. Like, I'm a songwriter, and I see that as an instrument, you know, and I have some training with my vocals, from, you know, singing in church at a very young age to, like, you know, doing like a travel choir. There was like this special travel choir that I participated in just to go to Kings Island with the amusement park at the end of the year. That was the only reason why I did it. Otherwise, I wanted to play basketball and kind of run the street with some of the neighborhood kids. But vocals and what else? I had a couple of years playing violin.
Oh, okay.
At a pretty young age. And, yeah, you know, I was raised by artists. We would play vocal melody games when I was a kid. So to some degree, I was really groomed to write songs and create music while, yeah, yeah.
Was anyone in your family someone we might know for their artistic pursuits?
You know, maybe, you know, I have an uncle who does, I don't even know really how to describe it. He's a Christian artist, and it feels like kind of like pop music of the 80s. He wrote a record called Jesus Love. I have an aunt who, you know, we lived in Hollywood, so they lived in Hollywood for a little bit, and so she did movies. She was in the movie The Jerk with Steve Martin, and, whoa, you know, you might see her at the very beginning of that film playing the part of one of his sisters.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, but, you know, it's, you know, nothing too huge or anything that you would know for sure right off the top.
Okay, well, you got some showbiz in your lineage, it sounds like. There's a,
yeah, a little bit of showbiz
interest in there, yeah. Adrian, similar kinds of questions. Do you have any sense recall of what got you into music? And within that, can you tell us a little bit about what it is you play, what it is you do?
Yeah, my primary instrument is guitar. I can fiddle around on everything else, but you know, I mean, competently its guitar. Yeah, I was into music and art at a young age. I was an only child. I was just kind of always drawing, listening to music. And my father actually, when I was 13, suggested I play piano. He was like, oh, you should take, you're into music, you should take piano lessons. But at 13, I just thought piano was just like for nerds. You know, I was like, man, I don't want, you know, I want to, I mean, guitar looks cool, but piano is just, you know, I was running around with skaters and it just was, I didn't want to get made fun of being the like classical pianist, which is a regret because I really wish I had like a foundation. But yeah, I started playing guitar. I was about 13, 14 years. I took lessons for a couple of years and then, you know, that just opened my world up to, you know, a life of music since then.
Did you have any particular like external influences? Because I, you know, and we'll get to sort of the workload division here because I understand it's shifted a little bit since the first record. Mm-hmm. But were there any particular producers or albums with production that inspire you or inspired you at the time?
At the time, I was really into hip hop when I started playing guitar, and I didn't quite like understand or really have a grasp of like what exactly the producer was. You know, I knew that Dr. Dre was the producer of NWA. I kind of thought maybe he played the keyboards. I didn't really know like at back then what that all entailed. So, but I was always, that was what I was really into at the time. I remember trying to recreate NWA beats on a little Casio keyboard and trying to like just take the dissect songs from the sound perspective and build them back up, and that's what I was really obsessed in. But then when I started playing guitar, you know, whatever, what all my friends and I were listening to, Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, you know, all the rock stuff from that time when I was in high school,
yeah,
started to get more into that stuff.
So you mentioned the piano, some regrets about not fulfilling your destiny to be a piano prodigy, I think is what you were getting at there. And then I listened to this record, some of the nicest, most prettiest piano I've ever heard. Who's responsible for that, Adrian?
That's your boy down there, the LA kid, the LA skater. That's Eric. Oh, the piano, like the prominent piano stuff that like carried on, you know, a couple of songs is Eric on piano. And then we have a keyboard player who probably is a lot of the stuff you hear too.
Okay, Eric, you were holding out on me. You're a piano player and clearly a gifted one. Well, maybe, did you mention the piano? Maybe I missed that. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mention that. Well, you know, because I don't really necessarily see myself as a piano player more than I write songs, right? So I feel like I could probably write a song on anything.
Okay.
But for this record, I was lucky enough to have the opportunity to write some songs starting from the keys, and in a lot of ways, that was where some of the feeling came from.
Yeah.
That we ended up keeping it, and you know, to then have our keyboard is kind of you know, kind of work around it for vibe as well.
Yeah. So I mean, earlier I alluded to the workload situation here, and the way you guys have framed it is. Eric, you were a songwriter and a singer, and your friend hooked you up with a kind of musical producer and arranger, it sounds like. Forgive me if I'm misrepresenting anything here and interject at any point, gentlemen, but that's my vibe. What I understand is those roles blurred a little bit more for Chronicles of a Diamond. Adrian, am I on the right track?
Absolutely. Totally on the right track. When we first met, I had already started some ideas and really had a real sonic direction, you know, already kind of stamped on a lot of these demos and things. And it turned out when we met and he showed me his songs that he had written before meeting me, Colors, Stay Gold, some of those, they kind of just happened to fit with what was I was already like hearing sonically from a, you know, production standpoint. So that was how we made the first record. And then this time around, you know, our relationships just evolved in general. But, you know, not only did Eric have song ideas, he had production ideas and very much had full directions on things that I just came in and stepped in where I was needed.
I appreciate that. Eric, can we talk about that evolution a little bit more? Can you elaborate upon it? What compelled you to want to bring some more musical ideas to the fore? And within that, did Adrian inform your lyricism, any other songwriting elements that you used to take on more?
Yeah, man, it's kind of hard in some ways to pinpoint exactly how the inspiration helped to influence the outcome of some of these tracks.
Yeah.
But I think ultimately what I realized in collaborating with Adrian was that the studio and the, you know, elements to the production really kind of work together in the same way that any instrument might kind of work for you. So when I was playing the guitar and kind of busking on the streets, I put a lot of the elements that you might delegate to different band members just playing the guitar. You know, there was, you know, started realizing, okay, well, I have a percussive sensibility. I have, you know, in some ways reflective of, you know, maybe the mind of a bassist, or, you know, in some ways lead guitar. You can kind of hear different elements in what I was doing just on my own, because that was the facilities that I had. But yeah. I think that the biggest and coolest inspiration came from realizing, you know, an expansion in the facilities. And so with that said, I'd always written songs without any boundaries in that way. So it was really cool to see how, Adrian would kind of piece things together pre-production wise to then, you know, maybe have, you know, a group of people kind of help to elevate the vision of the idea. So, yeah, it was kind of like, it's kind of like night and day. I feel like most of us know what we kind of want to hear. So it's been interesting to find that, that middle path where we kind of, we could meet.
I see. I think you're also saying that in the studio, in the moment, the spur of the moment can also be the blur of the moment. Like, ideas are coming fast and furious, and it's hard to pinpoint sort of where something came from a little bit because you've been working so well together. Is that a way of putting it?
Yeah. Yeah. I think the situation is, the situation has, really inspired what our output is. I mean, we started out with Adrian showing me ideas, and, you know, I had to elevate my facilities to be able to communicate with such a musician in a language that he would understand, right? So that was the hardest thing, was creating that bridge to help get some of my ideas across outside of taking what I'm given and making it my own. So, yeah, but I think, as far as like lyrics and stuff like that go, and like writing the songs, I think just, you know, spending time together, I probably, one of my biggest languages of love is quality time. And man, we got a whole lot of quality time, you know, on the road. And so, I think to that degree, to the degree that was just, you know, simply presence, most definitely influenced my lyrics and the song, especially like rock and roll. You know, I'm really singing to the moment.
Earlier, Eric, earlier, Adrian invoked Dr. Dre. Eric, you just invoked the percussive quality, the inherent percussive quality of your work as a solo musician who has to kind of compensate sometimes for the lack of other instrumentalists. I want to just draw a line to hip hop here, because Adrian mentioned Dr. Dre. Is hip hop an influence for you in particular, Eric?
You know, most definitely. But from the perspective that is rock and roll and kind of like punk rock, I really love hip hop for how left of center I think it can come across in a, you know, popular world. Yeah, so for me, it's just whatever feels like rock and roll. And sometimes hip hop is, I almost see hip hop as like, you know, the new rock and roll today anyway. So
you mean the attitude of it is almost more influential than the kind of sonic aesthetic or something?
I think so. Yeah. It's very like I'm attracted to the soulful nature that, you know, you people take to creating hip hop and expressing themselves. It's very much it just feels like punk rock and roll to me.
Yeah. Adrian,
As far as the attitude goes.
Yeah. And I agree with that. Yeah. Adrian, as I've been driving around with my family in our minivan, I know that's not very cool, but what are you going to do? I got a couple of kids. We got a minivan. Leave me alone, guys. I'm doing my best. Anyway, we've been we're blasting your record. And, for me, like one of the major touchstones for me is like, this reminds me of RZA. This reminds me of Wu-Tang Clan. Is any of that an influence for you in your work?
I think sonically that was a little bit more of an influence on the first record. But I will say that there is, in addition to everything Eric is saying, like, it's also, there's a certain way that hip-hop makes you, like, bob your head and snap your neck. And we're not, like, really, like, on the sleeve. We're really totally, like, trying to make a hip-hop song by any means.
Yeah.
But if it's like, if it makes us move, if it makes you move your head and you know, the way that, you know, a good hip hop beat does. We were just in New York a couple months ago, and we were at the hotel bar, and there was a song that came on. It was like a hip hop beat, and he's like, "Man, I just want all the drums we do to just feel like this." You remember that when we were at that hotel? So like that's. I think that's the thing right now. I don't think there was a specific like RZA reference or anything like that on this record. On the first one, to a certain extent, for sure, actually.
Okay.
But on this one, it was more just like, if it just feels the way that nasty beat feels, then that's kind of where we're aiming towards hip hop at, you know.
Adrian, do you remember what song you guys heard together?
No, I had never heard. It was just like a beat. Do you remember what it was, Eric? It came out in the hotel bar.
It might have been like a DJ'd situation, something mm-hmm. that you probably yeah. couldn't even
oh, okay.
Shazam.
Okay.
Yeah, you're right. It was a DJ. We were at the hotel bar and in the lobby, and there was just a DJ playing.
Yeah. Well, what I was going to get at there is when folks like me of my vintage say that something sounds like RZA or Wu-Tang Clan, we're probably talking about the early 90s to mid 90s. Like there's just something what is commonly known as kind of the golden age of hip hop. Do you have you mentioned NWA, late 80s. Do you have a particular golden age of that music that you hold particularly dear as a producer, Adrian?
I would say early 90s. Yeah. Early 90s for sure. I was way into, you know, even like the NWA, late 80s. I was a little kid and my neighbors would play basketball and play NWA. So I would just like go stand there and listen to it. But like, I think the early 90s is still kind of the sweet spot. For me personally, you know, and you mentioned RZA, like with the first album, before I met Eric, when I was just kind of like had this idea for this kind of sound that, you know, that's very much on the first album, like I was listening to a lot of soul stuff. And I remember having an aha moment listening to Ghostface Killah. Again, this is all I'm talking about the first album, not necessarily where we are now. But
you seem very careful to qualify that this is the first album. Has RZA and Wu-Tang been brought up to you numerous times?
A lot on the first album. People were like, yeah, you know, and I was like, it wasn't that much. It wasn't that overt. But anyways, I do remember one having this aha moment of hearing a Ghostface song, thinking oh shit, and went straight to the studio and like.
I don't mean any offense by it, by the way. I don't think derivative. It actually, because he doesn't. They don't make beats like that anymore in modern Wu-Tang.
It's soul samples with a weird twist to it, you know. So yeah.
Well, and that's just it, Eric. Your contribution as a vocalist and the lyrics is so soulful, and it is a compliment to these beats. So, which often they would sample the vocalist as well. So that's why Eric, have I offended you by suggesting that anything sounds like Wu-Tang or RZA? Because I'm just meaning it as a high, high compliment. That's it.
Yeah, Vish, I really wish you would stop. No, man. I mean, we, you know, don't get us wrong. I think that we're really honored to, you know, be compared to such acts and people, because clearly we're fans. But, with that said, there's some, you know, some obvious, differences between the first and the second album. And, as Adrian said, I don't know that, you know, he was specifically, you know, pointedly trying to, you know, remake something that he heard in any of those things.
Yeah,
you know?
Not at all. I think what I hear is love for it. And as someone who, as you guys might know, people who love that sound love it and are devoted to it and love the people who made it. And so we support them. So when I hear a younger artist or a contemporary artist echoing it, to me, it's another homage to that sound. It's not a rip off, awesome. Knockoff or anything like that. I want to talk a little bit about the lyrical intent here, if we can, in an overarching sense. A lot of romance, it seems, on the surface. Interestingly, I mentioned that, you know, I've been playing the record for my family, and my wife had heard of Black Pumas, but she's like, Black Pumas, that's a reference to Black Panthers? I was like, oh, huh, I never even thought of that. They don't seem particularly like political or anything, so I don't think so. It's just probably a little coincidence. But it did make me think about the lyrics a little bit more. I'm not coming at, by the way, I'm not going to ambush you with political questions.
Don't come at me, Beach. Don't come at me.
Because when I dig into the lyrics and the devotional quality, this is a very romantic album to me. Eric, given everything I've just said, can you talk a little bit about what inspired some of the songwriting here?
Yeah, I think, first of all, as far as some of the romantic elements about it, I probably prosper very well having partners, being a part of a team. In relationships, I do very well. I think it's you know, relationships. I need a relationship with people, and you know a significant other. So I think a lot of what you might be hearing is what I'm learning in my relationships. And so, you know, with that said, in conclusion, writing some of the newer tunes that weren't tunes like Angel that I wrote like 11, 12, 13 years ago, there were a couple of those that, you know, I wrote in a time where I was living in the inner city of Los Angeles, California, trying to figure out how to, you know, stay out of trouble, you know. But outside of that, my first band, right? First collaborative relationship to this degree with a producer, my first serious relationship. You know, my first time in a relationship to myself, being on my own to the degree that I have, you know, been blessed to be. Hmm. As far as, you know, having my own home and certain responsibilities, I got a dog, you know.
yeah.
And so a lot of what you're hearing is just, you know, me living my life and learning from, you know, what's happening, and then remembering. You know, like in Mrs. Postman, kind of remembering where I come from and encouraging others to keep going.
My wife and I were talking about Mrs. Postman the other day, and my son, who's 12, and we were reminding him or telling him, informing him that there's a very famous song called Please, Mr. Postman. And then that song's about the postman, the mail person, bringing love messages to you, you know, love letters and things like that. And my wife was like, is this a riff on that? I was like, I think it's just that the postwoman's kind of attractive. That was my read on it. Am I correct?
A lot of times when I go to write material, I will pop culturally reference something. And so your wife was right to assume that, yeah. The title of that or the aesthetic of the, you know, the language behind that song, was a little bit of an homage, to, Please, Mr. Postman. But, you know, again, I think that for how crazy my life has been as far as being a part of this project, learning a lot of things for the first time, I was writing a lot of this material to bring myself to a sense of presence that would point to balance and, you know, the abundance of love and peace that we all have access to. I really love listening to Chronicles of a Diamond for that. I think that I had just done my first Vipassana retreat. And
oh, nice.
For those who don't know, that's Vipassana is a meditation technique of just kind of like presence and awareness with the breath over, you know, some of the thoughts that we have. So over 70,000 thoughts we have a day, you know. So, you know, we battle with a lot of biochemical reactions to what we're thinking and what's going on around us. And so, you know, in Chronicles of the Diamonds, I'm kind of I'm beckoning myself to just listen, just be, listen to the waves say crash, you know, listen to my heart go boom bap, you know.
Yeah,
I thought that was a cool line when I came up with that.
That's
statement.
Good. is that traditionally a silent retreat?
Yeah, 10-day silent retreat, free lodging, free food. You're there with maybe 80 students and, you know, 7 instructors. And yeah, it's life-changing every time, life-changing every time. And so a lot of my music, I feel, and in the lyrics, I'm really trying to get there. I'm really trying to, like Albert Einstein said, really try to get to hearing the voice of God, you know, whatever that sounds like, whatever that is. So a lot of the music should really point to, should really make you feel like you're in the presence of maybe your highest self, or, you know, in reflection of something that is of the Most High.
Hmm. Adrian, a couple of related questions at the same time. One, can you give us a sense of when these songs were actually written? We're in 2024 here. It's been a strange time the last 4 years, of course, and people are writing songs about feeling isolated and trying to connect with others. And I gather that from this record that there's some of that swimming around here. And secondly, your perspective on what we've just been talking about in terms of these songs, do you have any perspective on where you think Eric might have been coming from with these lyrics? So two things, the when and the what, I guess, if I may.
Yeah. I mean, we immediately after started the, you know, kind of finishing the first album kind of blurred into starting the second album because we just kind of kept recording. That's just where we were at when we made the first album. It wasn't a real clear, we were a brand new band, and there wasn't a whole lot of like, it just, we had to finish it, turn it in, and we just kind of kept writing. I do know some of these songs, like Angel in particular, Eric had already written, you know, probably predating us even being Black Pumas. But so a lot of it, I think, comes from the period right after like 2018, probably through now. I think I'd imagine a good portion of it probably in that pandemic quarantine period, some of it, I think. I mean, Eric, correct me if I'm wrong. And lyrically, I don't write any lyrics. About the extent of my involvement is if I hear something, if he's stuck on something, or if he's still kind of like, whether freestyling or writing or improvising or trying to find a new hook or something, if I hear something I like, I'll point it out and I'll say, hey, this is dope. You know, just my two cents here is I think you could run with that.
Yeah.
Whether he takes it or leaves it. That's about my extent with the lyrics. And what I've always loved about the lyrics is that they're kind of like not like this simple surface level stuff. I feel like there's always, you know, you might hear a word and what Eric just said about, you know, a connection to God. It's like, that's kind of underneath it all. And that's what I love about it is you can almost kind of get, and I think Colors was a great example because that's a song that like people have given like 10 different meanings to, you know, and that's a testament to like the depth of it is that like, you know, to some people it's about just love. To some people it's about accepting all the different colors of people that there are, you know, there's so many things that, you know, it brought people together during the pandemic and stuff like that. And I think that still carries through with this record, you know, as I hear the lyrics on, it's not Waves. What is it called? The original title
Chronicles
was Waves,
Chronicles
of a Diamond. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's some of my, that one and, Tomorrow are some of my favorite lyrics. But you know, I'm hearing what I'm hearing and what it means to me may not actually be exactly what he intended and may not be what the next person listens to too. But I do think that at its core, a lot of what I really love about the lyrics is this search for connection and for love, you know, and a way to simplify it.
One of the trends I've noticed in some of the songs I've been hearing and the conversations I've been having with people like yourselves is that sometimes I presume a song is about romantic love. And what's becoming more common is it's actually about social love or platonic love, love between friends and that companionship. Eric, earlier you mentioned the song Rock and Roll, kind of came up in the moment and maybe was about this dynamic you have with Adrian. And Adrian was just saying that, you know, the superficial stuff, you have to dig deeper. It might not just be a love song like you've heard a billion times. There might be some other meaning there. Would you say that your approach to companionship and writing about it is maybe more dynamic than simply, you know, paying tribute to your partner or something like your romantic partner? Is it more nuanced than that, perhaps?
Yeah, man. I mean, yeah, a lot of the ideas, especially ideas that came about while we've been a band, right? So a lot of the energy that the people come to the table with themselves individually, I usually am utilizing to express myself. And so Rock and Roll is most definitely an immediate reflection of the energy that is being on tour, with, you know, your crew, you know, up against the world, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you're out there and it's exhausting and it's nonstop movement, you become a pretty, you know, highly operating, you know, system and unit that you sing to. That it's like the flag. It's a pretty, I don't know how to describe it. It's just so powerful, right? And so I think that there were moments that really needed some reciprocation of something tangible for us to kind of like go back to and like maybe a snapshot in time. And rock and roll was that way. Gemini's Son ended up being something that came out of the same type of amalgamation of inspiration, being on the road. Yeah, and it's all reflective of what's happening, you know? Like rock and roll, definitely that's band reflective and tour reflective. Gemini's Son is just, you know, the Gemini mercurial elements of that I feel were really inspired by just my trying to find, you know, my way into the next chapter, having, you know, been on the road for the first time and now we're doing it again, having gone through like the heartbreak and, you know, then finding new love. Yeah, I mean, it's so funny. I don't know how to, I don't really know where this stuff comes from, to be honest. I'm just trying to be present in the moment. And
I appreciate, you know, that. I know it can be hard to be put on the spot and be asked where some inspiration struck you. And at the risk of doing it one more time, I want to ask you about birds. There are birds on this record. There are black birds. There are blue birds. There are little birds.
Oh, man.
What do the birds represent to you?
You know, man, I'm not going to give you any kind of complicated, what is it? What's the movie Tom Hanks was in where he's like trying to like decode
Da Vinci Code?
Stuff.
The Da Vinci Code.
This isn't the Da Vinci Code. You know, it's just I really, when I was a kid, I've always wanted to fly. You know, it's really that simple. And then I have such a high attraction to nature. And so I really love to draw comparisons and, you know, to see how we are like nature and in nature. That's really important for me. And I think that birds represent maybe an overcoming for me, maybe represent a sense of freedom and fluidity in the way that we converse and, you know, in our relationship to ourselves.
More than conversing, they sing. They're free.
Yeah.
They're free, they soar, and they sing. So that's aspirational for you, the bird.
For sure. And you know what, man? Like, if I can dig in the, like, my little subconscious, like, file cabinet, I used to do, and this has no, like, I mean, I wouldn't say that I pointedly am inspired by this specific individual, but I did used to do a cover on the subway, like while the cars were moving and I'm like straddling, you know, chair to chair, my guitar. I used to do Three Little Birds as well. So, and I would do that a lot. I'm like, oh my God, I'm playing this like reggae song. You know, I'm learning how to perform really. Yeah. And, that was a really easy song for me to learn to play and perform. People liked it, but I think ultimately, in conclusion, I probably just sang that song so much that birds are just like imprinted on me, you know, pretty much.
Yeah, I like birds, and they are a symbol of all sorts of things: peace, love, psychedelia. We haven't talked about yet, and I just want to.
I thought you were going to say I like turtles.
I like turtles too, Adrian. We've talked about, I don't know, a sense of self, meditation, some sort of mind alteration from whatever, you know. There's a psychedelic quality to this band that I've talked about the hip hop quite a bit. Do you have a sense of where that fuzziness, that aesthetic kind of comes from for both of you, Adrian?
You know, it's funny. I've kind of lost perspective on what is psychedelic. And we did an interview with a guy we know here in Austin. And I mentioned that. And he kind of just made a joke. And he's like, Adrian, it's music that sounds good when you're on drugs. And I'm like, all right, fair enough. I get it. But, I don't know that I like purposefully want to make things psychedelic, but I will say like this: some friends of mine, a band from South America, was just messaging with them. They sent me their new album, and I checked it out, and it was like really cool. I was listening to it. I was like, it's missing like a little bit of danger, a little bit of edge, and from a technical standpoint, more from that standpoint. And I think more than anything, I like music that sounds just not perfect. Like I just imagine it's like if you're watching a movie and everything's CGI and everybody's airbrushed and everything. It's like watching without having anything being kind of psychedelic. Then it's like I just like things a little bit different, a little bit dangerous, a little bit edgy, like something that kind of like has you a little bit. It just takes you out of your comfort zone that much, you know. And I just think of like watching movies. If everybody in the movie was airbrushed and everything was CGI'd and everything, like I feel like I would turn that off, you know. And I like some like real edge, some real human element to it. And to me, that's what I try to make it sound like. And whether that's psychedelic, cool. If you're on drugs and it sounds good, even better. But like, I just like stuff to just be a little bit dangerous, a little bit, just push this a little bit more, make it a little, and not super safe. That's ultimately like what I always want to do 100% of the time. And that ends up being kind of just psychedelic for people.
It's a sweet spot. I think you guys have, if I may be objective about it, you've got Eric's beautiful voice. I think despite the multi layers, it's pretty direct lyricism. Like I can relate to it. So it's very human on that level and soulful. And yet it's got this grit. It's got this undercurrent of like edge to it in the musical, in the sonics of it, not just the instrumentation. So Eric, do you have any perspective on that? The notion of sort of bringing, I guess, like the clean and the dirty feelings that humans have and that aesthetic together. Is that something you're striving for? Or is it just the way it's worked out?
I think while I'm a songwriter first, the vibe of the spirit of the expression always starts with the music. So, you know, I would definitely have to attribute a lot of that to the grit and the sonic value to that initial conversation between Adrian and I for what he was showing me. Because with that sound was what really birthed the Black Pumas, like the vibe, the spirit, the soul. Because, you know, upon hearing that, I think that I was able to, you know, recognize a wave and then ride it. And so with that said, I think in conclusion, Adrian really took care of a lot of what you're hearing and what people might be calling psychedelic soul. It's been an honor to be able to see how my own perspective of, you know, in the production aspect of things would work to influence what you might continue to call that. Yeah. And I'll say that one of my favorite pieces of gear in all of that we've used for some of the songs were the Juno 6, I think, provided a really interesting kind of psychedelic effect in some ways, and especially in the song Hello. Yeah, a lot. I worked with a lot of synths this time. It was really fun.
I don't know if
I'm answering.
No, you did. You did. And I feel like you may not even know that you're part of a something of a renaissance with this, like really amazing soul music that's written really well and arranged really well, but sounds a bit fucked up. And it's happening a lot, in sort of underground and indie rock. And I'm hearing it on the surface too. And it's really cool. So I just want to commend you guys on this beautiful record and congratulate you on it. And, Adrian, earlier you said that basically Chronicles of a Diamond followed, you just kept going. You were making your first record and then you kept rolling basically into this one. Are you guys working on stuff as we're speaking?
As we're speaking, we're so in tour mode. We just finished like our first run, and then it was the holidays. So not necessarily. I'm sure Eric is writing, and I'm you know kind of always messing around with sounds and stuff. But at the moment, our immediate focus is really translating this record to the live stage. You know, we had our first run in December, and about to get back into it next week. And so I think that's like this record has so much. So many more layers to it that's kind of the task at hand right now is like, how do you make all that translate and what needs to be there and what doesn't need to be there? And how do we like, you know, just kill the live show and make it as exciting as the album?
How many band members are you going to have with you on this run of shows?
We have a 8-piece band right now. We had 7 on the last tour, and we've just added one auxiliary person, a guy who can just kind of play. He's this utility knife, plays extra keyboard parts, extra guitar parts, a little bit of backup vocals, percussion, whatever we need.
Oh, cool. That's great. That's awesome. That sounds fun, too. That sounds like a good show.
Yeah.
Eric, just so we can answer a query that Adrian's kind of floated out there. Actually, he was just following up on my question. Sorry, guys. Eric, are you writing songs? Are you working on songs right now?
Yeah, man. I mean, I kind of can't stop. It's a problem. I can't sleep, man. I can't sleep, man.
I'm sorry. I'm laughing.
They won't. The ideas won't leave me alone. It's like a curse or something, you know. While I'm being a little facetious, I have to. It's really important for me to be able to, have that mirror of a reflection for myself in the songwriting process and learning about, how to put different colors together as far as sounds and stuff go. For my own kind of meditation. And so I'm always doing something. I've learned in conclusion to that not all the ideas are for every project.
Yeah.
And so we'll see, maybe I'll take a cue from Q over here and just wait to see what ideas turn into what,
Yeah.
As far as projects and stuff like that goes.
Okay, cool. Now, if people want to learn more about Black Pumas, I assume the internet is full of stuff. You got a website. You got all that stuff. Is there anywhere in particular you'd like people to follow you guys, Adrian?
All of it, man. Instagram. I think we're on Snapchat and TikTok. I don't even know.
Yeah, you're not the one. You're not managing the socials, is what you're saying.
No, not at all. But please come to a show. That's what I would actually say. If you want to follow us, come. If we're in your area, come. Come see us play live. Yeah.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Eric, do you want people to follow you on anything?
I'll second what Adrian said. I think the social media is its own world and very important. But if you really want to get to know us, you really want to get next to us, experience us as a people, the show is the best place to do it.
Okay.
Because as we're very honest in those moments. So.
Yeah. Sounds good. All right. I want to go out on a song from this record right now for the people who've been listening to us. And I want to ask you guys to pick it. Now, we have 2 people here. This could turn into a debate. We have to be careful. I'm going to ask Adrian, I think, to pick the song. But Eric, you have veto power. If you don't like his choice, we can have a short debate and pick something else. Adrian, if we could go out on one song from Chronicles of a Diamond, can you choose one and tell us why it came to mind?
I would say if I was going to pick one right now, I would pick Hello. Hello, to me.
No,
Vito. Vito. Okay.
I'm just kidding. Go for it.
It was the first, like I said, we had kind of continued writing and recording some stuff that kind of spilled out of the first album, but that was the first kind of hard left turn I remember. That was during the pandemic. That was like kind of peak COVID time, masks and crazy, crazy vibe in the air. We got together and Eric had that synth idea on the Juno, and I just love that one because we did that in a room during the pandemic, and it was loose, and you can hear us laughing and you can hear sounds, and it just feels raw, and it feels like you're right there in the room with us. And that was the first like hard left turn I remember on the album where it was like, all right, yeah, this is different and exciting,
All right, Eric, do you want to say anything more about it? You quietly vetoed, but you're okay with it?
Hey, man, let's just take it out.
Let's just take it out.
Fine.
All right, let's just go.
Yeah, let's go.
All right, this is Hello by Black Pumas from their wonderful new record, Chronicles of a Diamond. Adrian, Eric, thank you so much for making so much time for me today. I hope you enjoyed yourselves, and I wish you the best of luck in the future, and I hope we talk again.
Thank you, Vish. This was really, really fun. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Vish.
Thank you. never been to Mars, and the pain can't get rid of it. The wheels fall off, we navigate to say, ooh, hello. 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 I never want to go again. I had to let you know again. I really want to love again. Hello. One more time, babe. I know you know I love you so. This time is closer when it looks at you. I say, hey, little darling, my heart hurts a little to say that I'm lost when you're loving the thick of it. I've never been to Mars, but I'm on my way. When the wheels fall off, help me navigate to say, ooh, hello. 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 I really wanna. Hello. I never wanna go.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Very, very special thanks again to Eric and Adrian from Black Pumas for being on the old show here to talk about their new album, Chronicles of a Diamond. All this for the 836th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available pretty much everywhere you get your podcasts. If you can't find an episode that you've heard about, but you're looking for it everywhere, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit vishkana.com. There's a follow Vish online link in the show notes, and it's there. You can try to find me on most social media platforms like Facebook and Twitter, and you can follow me there or like the page. If you're a porn bot listening to this, you don't have to follow me on Twitter. I know that you like all the tweets. I don't know what the point of that is. And then now you've moved from liking to the following. Why is that? I'm talking to you, porn bots. Maybe this isn't the right forum for this, but I don't understand. Please don't. If you're a porn bot, just don't follow me. That's all I'm saying. Please do, even if you are a porn bot, I guess, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to sustain me and this podcast. As I'm speaking to you, I no longer have a day job for the first time in 10 years. And I'm excited about this because it's going to free up some time. I've been working like a dog, and I haven't been enjoying myself. But I'm also a little scared financially, financial anxiety. However, I do like doing this show, and I hope that in the time I have, I presume in between day jobs, but hopefully not. I mean, this is part of this pitch, really. If I didn't have to get a day job, I'll just keep pouring all my energy into this and then doing stuff with my family, and it'll be great. But let's see what happens. Anyway, it's a great time to join the Patreon. There's more perks. There's prize packs. You get episodes earlier than everybody else. There's audio archives for certain tiers. The monthly prize pack tier is $10 a month American, and some of the other perks start at $6 a month. But you can donate any amount you want, and you can adjust that amount as you go. It's really quite simple. So if you're able to support me and my show, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to learn more about how to do that. Thank you. Thanks also to the fine Alberta record store Blackbird Music, which you can learn more about at blackbird.ca. Also want to thank Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, for their in-kind support for this show. As always, my love and thanks to Jim Guthrie for lending me music I use on this show. You can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you for listening to this episode with Black Pumas. I hope you'll check out their album, and I hope you'll subscribe to this podcast or follow it and tell your friends all about it. And I hope you'll check out the next episode because it's coming soon. I got nothing else to do. I'll talk to you soon. Bye for now. Thank you.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.